Well, another amazing week has gone around. But then don't forget to support hashtag Stop Galamse Now as we continue to fight against illegal mining in Ghana. For the next couple of minutes, however, we will be talking about technology in Ghana on Ghana's number one technology radio show. Welcome to City Trends. The show today, Alfred Rowe, chief brain behind Eagle Tickets and several other technology-driven companies and initiatives in Ghana, joins us as we talk about why companies and institutions should be placing more premium on software and technology engineers and how they can be roped into building stronger businesses in Ghana.
I also think it's also because we don't have a lot of technologically savvy people at the helm of affairs. So they don't really appreciate, look, if you are a software engineer, you basically sit behind your laptop or your computer all the time. And the computer is also a general purpose equipment. So you might have the secretary also using it. So he's going to feel, probably you just type faster than him and you just know some few stuffs on there. There's nothing really tangible. And we live in a country where we place a lot of premium on tangible assets. So you can't be behind your computer all the time because you are smarter than us. And
Jeffrey Reku Sapong also shares some interesting mobile applications with us in the app segment of the show. Farida Shaibu has some interesting news about Instagram and more in the trending segment of the show today. You can share your thoughts about the conversations you're going to have via the WhatsApp number 054-998-6996. You can also reach out via Twitter using the hashtag CityTrends. Also, get in touch with me directly by messaging me on Twitter. My handle is at Kofi Ashon. CityTrends is live and interactive. Today, we sit with a man who has been involved in quite a lot of things, but one of his main passions is, of course, the growth of businesses using technology. And he doesn't hold back, so you have to be on the lookout. We're going to be talking about why Ghana's top developers eventually leave the tech industry and actually extend it into other companies and how they treat their tech, the technology people. So, with me today is Alfred. Now, it would be best if I just allow Alfred to do his own introduction, because they say he's a big man, but how big a man is he? We're just going to get into that. Alfred, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for getting me on your program.
So, they say you're a big man. How big a man are you?
I'm not sure about that. I'm just also a tech enthusiast and a software developer. In the country, born and bred in Ghana I've been doing tech professionally since 2004 till now. Yes. So that's basically me.
They say you're a very straight talker. You don't play around the bush. You just go straight to the point. And that's why some people are not very comfortable with you.
Yes, that's true. Sometimes you have to call a spade a spade. And sometimes you have to be diplomatic. But most of the time, I think We try to be diplomatic, overly diplomatic, and then the real issues are swept under the carpet. So I'm not a fan of that. I feel like issues to be addressed head on, and then tackled head on, and solved head on. So that's how I roll.
Do you often find that people are not too comfortable to hear the direct truth that they need to listen to?
I think most people are, but I think it's also how, as Ghanaians, we are brought up. We are more subtle and we are more laid back. So even though people know you are being truthful, they are mostly reserved because they will be like, you are trying to be harsh. But a typical example is if you look at how Americans are, they are very direct. And if you look at how British people are, they are very diplomatic. So I think it comes from our colonial background a bit also, to be a bit very diplomatic when we go ahead on. issues. Yes.
Well, then let's get direct into the issue. We find a lot of situations where you walk into a company and you're looking for the head of technical. That's what typically they call it. Right. But then he's a man who basically makes the company run. You know, in terms of the technology that they need to use, when the printer is down, when the internet is down, he's a man who basically gets the company working. And it's weird how, despite their key role, they are not given such a prominent position in terms of the hierarchy of the company. You recently wrote an article and basically expanded a bit on that. And I just want us to get into how big a deal is this sort of trend where a lot of companies don't seem to place premium on their quote-unquote technical officers?
It's actually huge. And we live in a technology world now. And if a company wants to stay on the competitive edge, you definitely have to employ a lot of technology in how your operations run and all that. And the stakeholders of these various technologies, they must be taken much more seriously. I also think that the reason why, as a country, we currently don't take technical staffs much more seriously is because we've not been in this space for long. So people haven't really seen in like a span of, let's say, you can't look at the technological history of Ghana in a span of, let's say, even 50 years. I mean, we've been very active in the last, I would say, 8 or 7 years. So it's very difficult for CEOs and key business decision makers to actually see the full scale of how their operations affect businesses going forward and have a direct impact on businesses. Yes.
But then the issue is that a lot of the work that most companies do today, whether they like it or not, has a basis on the technological sort of side of things. So how come, even though a lot of the work that they do, whether it's a transaction or whatever it is, they still refuse to acknowledge, you know, the people who make these things happen?
I also think it's also because we don't have a lot of technologically savvy people at the helm of affairs. So they don't really appreciate, look, if you are a software engineer, you basically sit behind your laptop or your computer all the time. And the computer is also a general purpose equipment. Mm. So you might have the secretary also using it. You might have the CEO also using it.
So what really makes you so different? Yes.
So he's going to feel, probably you just type faster than him and you just know some few stuffs on there. Mm. There's nothing really tangible. And we live in a country where we place a lot of premium on tangible assets. So you can't be behind your computer all the time because you are smarter than us and expect to earn much more than us. But if we had more technical people in charge or in much more decision-making processes, I think they'll bring the whole team on board as to appreciating some of those efforts much more. Yes.
So you outlined a couple of things that you have noticed from your years of experience about what really leads a lot of engineers, software engineers, and technologically inclined people to leave the industry. And you made it specific to the technology industry, but then I'm guessing this also has effects or implications for other people in other sectors as well.
Yes. I think the article I wrote was targeted at top engineers, or let's say experienced engineers. But I'll try to expand it to even other fields, industries, and all that. Look, it takes time to build your skill, and it takes time to build your experience. Even if you're a journalist, a journalist with a one-year experience would definitely not be the same as a journalist with 10 years of experience. You might have interviewed several people, seen several temperaments, know how to handle things much more differently, and the rest. So these things come with a lot of, background skill, hard work, and all that. And I feel like most technical staff, as they mature in their role as engineers and the rest, companies don't pay premium on the knowledge they gather along. Yeah. So sometimes, let's give an example. Let's say a company is building a system where the system is going to handle maybe trillions of transactions. A typical example is a Visa Global. I mean, you can check it out on Wikipedia. They process over $1 to $2 trillion every year. You can break it down to Visa making $100,000+ a second. That tells you that their system is processing at a very high rate. This is not systems built by engineers who just completed school. Not to belittle, I mean, we've all been at that stage before. Mm. But these are built by much more refined engineers who know how to build large systems. You think Visa won't place a premium on these engineers? Visa will place a premium on them, because if let's say Visa goes down for even an hour and they are making $100,000 a second, 1 hour, you can see how many seconds we have even in a minute to 1 hour. And you can see the direct impact it might have on the business. Amazon and the rest are not titans just because of wishful thinking. It's because of hard sheer work. WhatsApp, a company with less than 50 people, are processing messages more than all the telecoms in the world put together. That tells you the engineering prowess that company has. Facebook, Google, and the rest, they are all not companies built just by wishful thinking. They are built by core engineers who do a lot of hard work. Imagine building a search engine is as easy as ABC. Google would not have been the world's leader in search. That tells you they are doing something very unique. If we also move to the automobile industry, we have few outstanding companies in there. We have companies that are also in the middle ground, and we have companies that are also now starting up. I don't think Mercedes has... Mercedes can compare itself with, let's say, Tata. Because Mercedes has huge years of experience building stuff. They were doing V6 engines way back in the 80s. It is now that some of these companies have caught up on V6. So you can clearly see how top engineers have a direct impact on companies' revenue. And I feel like the local companies here don't place a lot of premium on that. What they feel is that, well, it's like it's a software department. We can hire a lot of hands to build it. But like a friend usually says, there was a joke a friend was telling me. If you want to give birth to a baby so fast, it still doesn't take 9 men. It takes 9 months.
I like that. Well, listeners, you're still tuning in to City Trends on 97.3 City FM. We're having a conversation with Alfred Rowe. Now, he says, people often call him a doctor. I'm not sure. Probably before the conversation is over, we'll get to understand why the doctor comes before his surname. But we're having a conversation generally about how much premium companies put on their quote-unquote technology officers or their technology engineers, and why we should be paying closer attention to our technology engineers even as businesses, especially in this time when a lot of the work that we do is centered on the development of good technology, fast technology, and very dependable technology. So what other things do you think companies and, you know, people take for granted when it comes to their outlook of technology engineers?
Right. So I also look at competition. I would say competition down here in the technology space is not too fierce. So it's easy for top companies to just have top engineers move from one company to the other. Mm. Let's turn the other coin. Let's say you are in Silicon Valley or you are in US and you are one of the core engineers on Google search engine. It will be difficult, and Google will make sure and try as hard as possible they don't lose you to a competing search company. Mm. Because you are going to live with Intel. Mm. You are going to live with a lot of ideas. You are working with a team. The team might have planned stuff that they might be doing next year, 2 years, 3 years down the line, and the rest, and you are moving along. Mm. You get it? So these things are very key. There are a lot of engineers on Google's payroll who don't even work in the company. Mm. You get it? Just because they have to keep those top engineers away from competing companies, which is also a strategy, a competitive strategy. Mm. So as competition gets keener in our local space, the issue of top engineers and top technical people will become very prevalent. Mm. People will pay much more premium to it as competition becomes more stringent in our local space. So competition is one. Because of our low level of competition, people don't see the impact when top engineers move from one company to the
other. But then someone will say that, you know, then that means that the technology engineers will be holding the company to ransom almost. It's like, if you don't pay me more money, I'm going, you know, that sort of thing. And I mean, as a business owner, you know, people will have to consider that, because if someone is holding you to ransom, you have to find the best way around it. And I mean, it's just, I mean, the idea is, oh, it's just one engineer. I mean, we have a whole team. We have laid out our plans. How bad could it be?
Right, right. So I also own a business. So I perfectly understand what you mean. Technical people who hold companies to ransom, they are not, I mean, professional technical people. Mm. And even for any sort of field, any expert could hold anybody to ransom. And I don't think that's a very professional way to go. If you have a much more refined engineer, that's what he's going to allow your company to do. He's going to allow your company to be self-reliant, not on him. That's what a top engineer will do. A top engineer will make sure that the company runs without him. Because being an engineer, a top-level engineer, doesn't just mean you are always elbow deep in source code. Decisions you make are key. It's like you're a coach and you have players. You could have the best players on the park, but if your strategy is not well, you might not put them to good use. So being a lead technical person does not only mean you are directly involved in the physicalities of everything. Sometimes you are involved in the decision-making process, the strategy process, and all that. And I feel that a better technical person with experience lays down a much more longer strategy for a company. So even if he is not around, the company has something to look up to. But what companies feel like is, if you do all these things, the value, your value proposition is bigger. So companies feel like they don't need to lose you, because you need to be around and all that. So that is why I feel every top engineer does much more decision making than elbow deep in source code and all that.
See, right? How big a deal is the amount of money? Because the truth is that we all need the money to survive. Right. If you don't pay me well, I'll have to look for a place. You know, so no matter what sort of long-term plans I put together for the company, if the salary just doesn't match up, I will have to find my way around. So how big a deal is the money factor when it comes to software engineers or technology officers within a company?
Right. So salary is always a huge issue. And I must admit also, in recent times, salaries have generally been okay for technical people in the country. But overall, this is what I'll say. If like I said in my article, if you are young engineer who just software engineer who just came out from school, and you are now honing your skills, you are working in a good company, and you are taking home these days, young engineers take around maybe 3,500, 4,000 every month. You are still living with your parents, you have your laptop, you are going to work, life is easy. I mean, along the line, you begin to have responsibilities, you are married, you have kids, and all that, things begin to change. And suddenly the 3,500 or 4,000 doesn't look so fancy again. And you feel like, well, at this stage, it should double or it should be this or that. I mean, there's no formula for salary. But this is what I'll say. What I have found is that most companies can pay premium salaries and still maintain a very nimble team that is still very effective. What most companies actually do is they spread their base, they overhire. So it's not as if they don't have the capacity to pay well. Let's say there's a department that your top engineer could be maybe doing about five things, or maybe could even lower your staff count because you have a lot of experienced people at the helm of affairs. So your team is about just a team of five. Like the example I gave, WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. It's just a team of less than 50 people. They are doing the work of all the telecoms in the world put together. Mm. You get it? That tells you that the engineers there are saving the company a lot of cost, because they are doing the work of thousands of engineers.
Which means that the money can then be...
You get it? Mm. So why would WhatsApp say, instead of paying you let's say $150,000 in terms of their standard, $150,000, $200,000 a year, I should pay you $50,000 and rather spread the base to about 1,000 engineers, which even slows down processes because decisions have to be made and all that. It terribly slows down a lot of stuff. So that is what I feel. most local companies just spread the base for no reason. So you have a lot of engineers in companies who are very redundant. They hardly work. They go to work and they have just a small piece of task to do. And they are taking home about 60% of the senior engineer's salary. You get it? And it affects how the company also progresses because there's a lot of people on board now. Decisions have to be made. I mean, a big ship, it takes
the company and everything.
All that. You get it? So this is what I feel. Companies should always make it difficult to give up their nimble position. Stay small and move very fast. And stay small and be very swift. So hire with caution so that you can place a lot of premium on the engineers that you have, right?
But still tuned in to 97.3 City FM. It's a very open and engaging conversation, very frank conversation about technology engineers, about people who work within a technology space in various companies, in various institutions. And we are trying to decipher or understand some of the reasons why they eventually tend to leave and what some of the remedies are that, you know, companies can look at to basically change the mindset in terms of the hiring and the retention of technology officers. One of the things that you mentioned in your article was the issue of top managers not being technical enough. Can you explain that and what's the impact of that? And possibly sort of round it off by explaining how, you know, some of these things can be worked around.
Right. So, like I also said earlier in the conversation, as a country, our technological industry is very short. I mean, we just have few years. We've been few years active in tech, even though there have been a lot of renowned companies that have been doing this for over a decade.
Even within this,
yes, time, yes. But it's still a very relatively young industry. So you realize that most of the managers that we have didn't come from a time where technology was at the helm of affairs. So it's not their fault. You get it? That's why I always say, as stakeholders of tech, we always need that opportunity to always engage them and bring them on board. Because sometimes, clearly, they don't even know the impact that is. They feel it's just, a competitive strategy. These people have this website, let's also go and get some. You get it? There's no very key...
My favorite so far is, their website is nice, so let's do some.
Exactly. You get it? So that's how it is. But I feel where we can bridge the gap is where we have IT managers. Mm-hmm. Because IT managers are also key decision makers within the management space, right? So IT managers can sort of bridge the gap between bringing management on board. The reason is that most managers, final decision makers, come from a sales or marketing or business development background, right? So it's easy to see the sales department, the sort of impact they are making. Mm-hmm. It's easy to see when a sale has been killed and all that. It's easy to just see all that. It's much difficult to see, hey, we are developing, we are trying to build a new payment system for this company.
The and you've been. And
the team has been working on this for, let's say, a year and a half. Mm. What's going on? Mm. What are you guys doing there that you can't.
What time are you doing?
Exactly.
Right.
You get it? Because it is not his fault. He's not technical enough to understand to appreciate what is going on in there.
Mm.
You get it? And it takes a lot of re-education and bridging the gap by IT managers to bring some of these managers on board. Mm. I also feel most technical people don't know how to sort of upsell value proposition in terms of technological products. It's also a very huge thing. Most technical people just speak technical language. There are two engineers. They are both trying to sell a diesel engine. That's what the first engineer is saying. The first engineer goes, tells the business guy, hey, this is a diesel engine. It is low in combustion. It has this capacity. It can do that. When it's in your vehicle, you don't have to waste time and do this and that. And says all the technical things. Then there's a second engineer. He comes. And then he's like, hey, this diesel, it saves you 60% of your petrol cost. The second engineer makes business sense to the business person. Because at the end of the day, the business person doesn't care about what goes on in there. It is a value proposition. What what affects the business? Right. How does the business change with this? How do customers perceive this? Is this a retention strategy? Does this improve or cut down cost? Sometimes you can even increase revenue. Sometimes you can even increase revenue by cutting down cost and the rest. Is operations now much smoother? You get it? So these are key things that the decision makers want to listen to. So I also feel that the technical people need to learn how to break down a lot of information for the other non-technical people. Exactly. So that brings them on board much faster. So that they see the benefits of what they are doing. A typical example is, okay, a technical staff is trying to convince management that, hey, let's develop our own system in-house. You need to let them know why you have to do that. Would it cut down cost? Would it do this? Would it be swift? Yes, you need to spell out all those things. Yeah. You don't need to go like, okay, it's because we have better engineers in-house. If you have better engineers in-house, people will always build their own cars. We won't go out to buy cars. You get it? So management, I feel technical people need to speak sometimes the language of management and then non-technical people to bring them on board. So that is some of the...
Even as we wrap up, one of the things that a lot of people say is, you know what, you can go. It's fine.
Right.
Just go. I'll find somebody else. And the truth is, quite a number of people are being churned out from our technical institutions every day.
Yes.
Is that not a viable solution?
Yes, that's a viable solution. I mean, you can always move on. The company will always also move on. Mm-hmm. Like I said, if you look at two cars, you pick a low-level car, which is for a market that can also afford that, and you pick a premium car, the engineering is different. Usually, if you go into the company, the engineering teams are different. You get it? As our competition is not stringent, you find it that it's easy to let go top engineers, top technical engineers, and employ a lot of new engineers and engineers who are hungry to grow and the rest. But as competition gets stricter, you need much more refined engineers. You need much more solid engineers who understand how things work, have built scalable systems, have worked across several systems before. Because I always say, software is not just because it is working. That is what people feel like. Most managers are like, okay, it is working. That is not. I've seen a lot of systems where, you know, you go in and security-wise, it's not even a top-notch system. But that's not what the layperson will see. But because our industry hasn't grown yet, people haven't seen the impact of those. Once the industry begins to grow, becomes more competitive.
You have to change.
Exactly. People will begin to pay premium. Mm. Like today, if you were 10 years ago, if a typical network security expert walked to a bank and said, hey, I want to pen test your network security systems and the rest and probably put me on a retainer, most banks will tell you, what are you talking about? Because the bank now, there's no internet to access their services and the rest. True. I mean, but in modern times now, the trends have changed. Okay. The trends have changed. As we progress, the issue of security becomes more serious, and you realize there's a lot of payment systems going around and all that. And these are not systems that are built by, yes, of course, we have junior engineers in there who need to learn the ropes, like all of us. But you also need your technical staff to guide. You get it? So that at least the next generation of engineers have something to build on. They also have their own skills to also pass on and the rest. So I feel, yes, companies can always let go. And sometimes for the right reasons. Yes, for the right reasons. If you feel you are being held at ransom, it's better to let go than to keep on keeping that person there. And you always find another engineer around. There are a lot of engineers now. Right.
So even as we wrap up, I'll be coming to Alfred to just wrap up with his final comments. But we have been talking about the technology industry in Ghana as it is today and how difficult it is for companies, number one, to even retain some of their top technology officers and even appreciate them in a manner that is right. Well, Alfred, even as we wrap up, my first question, you're wrapping up comments, and then when you finish, you can tell us why they call you doctor.
So, I'm a very passionate person in the tech space. I think most people know me by Alfred Rowe or my Twitter handle, Nocturna. And I believe technology can transform a lot of businesses and the way we do a lot of things in this country. If we apply tech efficiently in even our public sector, we could cut down a lot of cost and make a lot of money. An example is like, let's say, police stopping people along the road. I mean, we can employ a very sweet ticketing system. Police stops you, they give you a ticket. You have, let's say, a week to pay at several government points. Mm. So there's one policeman standing by the road can stop about 100 cars in a day. He doesn't need to walk with the car and all that. Just imagine the impact and the revenue that would generate and all that. So I'm a firm believer that technology will transform. And I'm encouraging all young people who want to go into the tech space that it's an exciting space. It's a space that demands a lot of your time, but I mean, it's an exciting space to go into it.
Can you call your doctor?
I really don't know. my friends give me doctor. I think it's because I pay a lot of attention to detail, and like you said, I cut the crap out of a lot of things and hit the point straight. I think that's why they call me. So this is a street doctor.
One of the things that you are knee deep in is Ego Tickets founder, right? Obviously. Tell us about number one, Ego Tickets, and also what this year holds for Ego Tickets.
Right. So Ego Tickets was founded in 2003 to sort of change the way we organize events and sell tickets in this country. So the main focus of Ego Tickets is to democratize electronic ticketing, or tickets, as we say. The typical event organizer in Ghana, if you want to organize an event, there's the normal process. You first have to go and get a graphic designer, print your develop your design. Then you have to move on to the print house, where each ticket might cost you, let's say, 5 CD per print. Mm. So if you are printing, let's say, 10,000 tickets, or you let's just say 1,000 tickets, that's 5,000 ahead, not even sale. That's immediate cost. Then after that, you just have very few outlets to sell your tickets. Mm. So these are challenges for the organizer, first of all. And then for the attendee, if you are coming from a very far place, you have very few key places in the city to get tickets. Yeah. You can travel all the way to the place just to realize that it's finished. And you've had wasted your time, your money, and wasted a lot of effort. Another issue organizers have is they can't track sales in real time. So these are some of the things that Ego Tickets solves. So Ego Tickets allows organizers to just come online. They can set up their tickets in the span of 3 minutes, add their ticket information, add the event information. Ego Tickets takes care of their social media promotions and all that. And organize attendees from all parts of the world can buy tickets online. So immediately your ticket is available everywhere. Currently we've registered over 25,000 unique attendees since we launched, and we've promoted over 14,000 events in 13 African countries. What we'll be doing this year is actually changing our strategy a bit. We feel old habits die hard. So we want to bring the tickets much closer to the attendees. So we feel the internet, even though the internet is catching up, people are a bit slow to adapt to it. So what we want to do is take the ticketing to the offline space. So Ego Tickets will be coming live. This year we'll be launching a new version of Ego Tickets, which will be available also on USSD. So it means if an organizer sets up an event and it's online, somebody with even a YAM phone can still purchase a ticket or register for the event. And they can just dial a short code. Your event comes up, they can just buy the tickets and off they go. And the organizer has access to all this information. Mm-hmm. Ego tickets is free as long as your event is free. It's free. We send SMSs. We do all that on your behalf. So that is basically what Ego Tickets does.
Well, Dr. Alfred Rowe has been our guest on City Trends today. We've been talking about the technology space generally and the premium that we place on technology officers and, you know, software engineers, and some of the remedies and ways by which we can go about remodeling the way we approach technology officers or and software engineers within the industry. It's been a worthwhile conversation. Thank you so much. You are still tuned in to City Trends on 97.3 City FM with me, Philip Ashon. You can join us with your questions via the WhatsApp number 054-9986-996. You can also reach out via Twitter using the hashtag CityTrends. Joining us now is Jeffrey Orekwusapong with the app segment of the show. So Jeffrey, last week we looked at some pretty interesting apps.
Yeah.
Do the apps this week look any better?
It is if you love food.
Okay. I mean, we do. Okay, I do. I don't know about anybody else, but I know
I think Farida does. So it's
Farida absolutely does. So what apps do we have for this week?
So my first app, that's the food app.
Mm.
It's called Taste Made.
Taste Made.
Yeah.
Okay.
And this one gives you recipes. And it's different because the recipes are made in videos.
The recipes are made in videos.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I call it a cook-along app.
Okay.
So you open the app, it gives you videos on how to make a certain type of food.
Hmm.
And every day they give you a different type of food you should try out.
Okay.
So today's food is called Funfetti Cream-Filled Sponge Cake.
I won't even try to repeat that. So basically what you're saying is that every day when you open the app, it gives you new stuff that you can try out to cook.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And it's on iOS and Android.
iOS and Android. So the name of the app once again is?
Taste Made. TasteMade. There's no space.
Okay. Taste Made is the mobile app. If you're a foodie or you're basically looking for a way to surprise that special person in your life and you want to cook something really interesting, this app actually gives you new recipes or new meals that you can try your hands on every single day.
Yes.
Fabulous, fabulous, fabulous. So, apart from the foodies, I'm sure there's something else for us for this week.
The second one is our own Kasahoro.
Yes.
Finally,
finally, we get Kasahoro on the show. So, okay. What is Kasahoro?
I won't talk too much. Let's just listen to them.
Okay.
We are Kasahoro Foundation, a publishing house based in Ghana with a distributed team, mostly volunteers all around the world. We publish content in African languages. We have content in print and electronic media across over 32 African languages. We also do localization and internationalization of African languages. We have this keyboard app, which is available on Android market and the iOS market. It is called Kasahoro Keyboard. So Kasahoro Keyboard is built to give freedom to people to be able to communicate in the local language. So how does this work? You download the Kasahoro keyboard app on your phone. You change your keyboard default to Kasahoro so that it gives you the option to select the language layer that you want to use in your communication. So for instance, as an Akan person, I can choose the Akan keyboard layout, which comes with a normal keyboard layout. But this time around, I have the Akan alphabet, which is the A and the O. That will enable me to actually write or type in the Chi or the Akan language. Kasahoro is so special, and it doesn't contain any adverts. It is free on both markets. You don't have to pay anything to get it installed on your phone. And when you get it installed on your phone, you are not worried with any adverts or so ever. Kasahoro is spelled Kasahoro. I take it again. Kasahoro. HOROW, Casahorro. Yes, so you can visit the iOS market or the Android market. Just type Casahorro at the search button and the app will just pop up. Install and enjoy communicating your local language.
Okay, so I mean, that basically sums it up. I think they've done a fabulous job with that mobile application.
Yep.
And I think it's something that we should be proud of.
It's fun. I mean, I love this app. It's the best keyboard app I found so far, I must say.
Mm. And I mean, especially for those of you who like to, you know, send really quirky messages or, you know, it's such a fun discovery in itself.
Yeah.
You know, because you discover so much about the language as you continue speaking.
Exactly.
And also, hey, if you want to pull a prank on someone, you can use the mobile app and then they'll be probably scratching their heads as to exactly what you're trying to say. Yep. But I think it's a fabulous app.
It's a great app.
It's a great app. So we have an app for you for this week, for you foodies out there. And then we have an app for you, those of you who want to extend your language skills as well. Mm. So we have you covered on CT Trends. Thank you so much, Jeffrey,
for those
two mobile apps for this week. Coming up next is Farida Shaibu with a trending segment of the show. And so in studio with me is the lady of the hour, the champion lady of the show, Farida Shaibu. Welcome to the show once again. So lots of things happening all over the place. Which one are you going to start with?
This one is quite, I don't know if it's a Sylvia, but I think it should be. We're starting with Uber.
Okay.
And you've tried it before, right?
Yes, actually. Today I was in an Uber ride somewhere from Circle to the office.
How does it feel like having to give every direction to the Uber driver? People will say they are not as smart,
right?
As the taxi driver who knows everywhere.
Who knows
but it's quite place, annoying when you have to tell him that, okay, use this route, especially when you're in traffic and they don't even know the shortcuts.
I guess that's why the company, for example, at a point said they were pretty satisfied with Google Maps and the turn-by-turn directions in Ghana. So I'm guessing over time, people will probably get to adapt it.
I think, yes, we have a little bit of problem, but I think they're trying. But now there's a new update called the Waze update.
Yes.
What it does is that it gives you the chance to record your own directions.
Okay.
So let's say that probably you have a specific location or just anywhere. If I'm coming to work, I'm used to coming to work. Obviously, the Uber driver will be a different person each time. So I just record the direction. And then as we move along, my voice starts playing 10 left, 10 right. And it's interesting to know that...
For the Uber driver?
Yes. Interesting to know that you can let your spouse record for you if you think your voice is weird, not as sweet as mine. So...
Okay. All right. And, so and this is a collaboration between... What Uber and Waze?
Yes. So you can let your spouse record for you, or you can even do it in any language for your mother or any relative.
Okay.
So let's say I'm going to my boyfriend and he records for me. Probably I don't know the first time. Okay, when you go to the you get to this lane, you get to the watcher joint. Hey, baby, pass here. You know, it's kind of interesting.
So it's customized sort of directions. And so what do you send these directions to? The Uber driver, or what exactly do you do?
So what happens is, you know, Uber has this system which gives you using the GPS, So I think you go through that same process, and then using that, you're able to record your own voice. So instead of, you know, 10 minutes from here, you turn left, you'd use that, you go through the process. So when it comes along, I'm sure that we can be able to activate it on the app.
So when are we going to see this?
For us. Very soon. Like they always say, it's in the pipeline and it will be on Android for now.
Okay.
You know, we always have it first. I don't know if you're using iPhone, but we always have it first.
Android always has a way of punching
yes,
a little
we always have it first.
Above their weight. But then, okay, so this sounds pretty cool. Like, I mean, if, for example, someone is coming to your house or you want to get your grandma to some location, you can basically record the directions for them and then send
and
it
get
over.
Them, yes, to
that's,
come over.
That's really cool. I want to see how the integration will go for the driver's side because the Uber drivers have a different interface sort of from us customers. So I want to see how that will be integrated.
Yeah, I think they're going to fix everything to make it a bit easier, you know. Not very uncomfortable for the drivers. It's going to be quite easier for their job. So let's see how it goes. I hope Well, Uber always has something new, so let's see.
Well, yeah, I mean, with all their issues that they've had last week globally, I guess it's refreshing that, you know, they are, number one, listening to the people in Ghana and sort of tailor-making some of the things that we desire of the app. I think it's pretty cool. Yes. I can't wait for it to be rolled out. I think it'll be nice.
And then, Instagram.
Instagram. Yes. What is up with Instagram?
Instagram.
Are there more filters?
Okay. They are not like Snapchat.
Yes, of course they are not like Snapchat. Thank God they are not like Snapchat. All right.
The numbers are increasing though on Instagram because now they've made it an open platform where you're not supposed to necessarily download the app. You can go to your browser and then open Instagram there.
Okay.
And now it's made it quite easier because, you know, sometimes you are being, you have conflicts whether you should remove this app and then download a different app, you know, especially when you don't have space on your phone. So you go like, okay, I like all of these apps, but which one do I
get rid of? Because sometimes the WhatsApp can take a lot of disk space.
And
that's
Facebook,
so true.
You know, every time. So sometimes it gets confusing which one you should remove. But now Instagram gives you the chance to just go onto your browser and then you're able to do. But it's quite restrictive because you're not supposed to or you're not able to upload videos. And you can't do filters, obviously. And then you're not supposed to share stories. And you can't do direct messaging. So, but all this is just to build up their numbers. So instead of me downloading the app, and I'm not supposed to... You can still access it.
Even though it has a few restrictions, at least you can access Instagram.
And in the last 4 months, it has added about 100 million users. So you have an account, all right, but the fact that you're not using the app doesn't mean you're not on Instagram. So it gives you that chance. And they've been able to build about 700 million monthly users. So that's quite interesting.
I think it's pretty awesome when you think about it, especially with the issue that you raised about the space on people's devices.
Yes, yes.
You
know, I've had that issue before. Until I changed my phone, I was restricted to what apps I should use and what I shouldn't.
It's like you take a picture, you have to go and delete the picture or a couple of other pictures. But at least now, you can just, I mean, people will feel a little hard done by the fact that, you know, they can't add filters and things like that. But at least it keeps the community growing.
Not everybody even takes pictures. Like, people do it for a lot of stuff. Probably they'll be just sneaking on people, like, you
just
know.
Just checking up on people.
So we all have various ways of using it. And from Instagram, we are going to Facebook.
Okay.
Now, Facebook.
The parent company.
You see, Facebook is always in the news and Mark is always up to something. But this time, a U.S. newspaper, the U.S. Today, is actually asking Facebook to fight fake users. You know, there are a lot of people on Facebook, fake accounts, and there are a lot of things going on. In fact, Facebook said they've actually been able to, you know, delete more of these accounts. But for instance, when they did that, the U.S. Today likes reduced from 15.2 million people to 8.2 million.
Wow.
So it tells you the number of fake users who are actually
on that platform
alone. 15.2 to 8, almost half of them are fake users.
That is crazy.
So, you know, last time I think I was even, it's even on Instagram. I was checking Instagram and I saw one particular post. I think it was one celebrity something. And the comments that were coming were very similar.
Right.
So I noticed that, oh, okay. So let's
say most likely
this person writes, you are pretty. And all the 10 comments that follow it, you are pretty. The same way written, everything, but see different names.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's quite interesting. It's weird. Why do people do that though?
I mean, we've had an issue of fake news and now we have
fake likes.
Fake humans and fake likes and things like that. But then, yeah, I mean, occasionally Facebook does that. But I think the numbers that you presented are pretty incredible.
Yes.
From 15.2 million to 8.2
million. That's
just by a weeding out. You know, they should come and ask Nanando how he's doing it. You know, because he says he's going to weed out all the ghost names. So, hey, Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg and Nanando should have a conference one of these days and figure out how to weed all those people out. All right. So wrapping up with the training segment, what's our final story?
Our final story is Google Drive. I'm sure a lot of us use it.
Absolutely.
Often.
I mean, if you have a Google account, you should have a Google Drive account as well.
You should. So now it's hit about 2 trillion files stored on Google Drive alone. 2
trillion.
Trillion files. Like, I can't even mention it.
Boy.
So after billion, you go to trillion.
Wow.
Stored on Google Drive alone. And they are assuring us of safety. And
the day we will lose our files, the only God knows. 2 trillion.
Google is saying that they're keeping all these files for you. They are in safe hands. Mm. So it's more like... Yes.
Yeah.
It's more like an cloud, iCloud for iPhone users. And iCloud has 782 million users. Mm. So I think, you know, Google has a whole lot of services and apps. So all these apps, when you have the drive, yes, you're able to keep them on it.
Yeah.
And then it's quite interesting how they are able to, you know, get all these things together.
One of my favorites is when using an email app, can't mention which one, but then basically I'm able to tap into my Google Drive, get my pictures and my files from there, and attach it and things like that. So I think that integration also has helped. They've opened up their doors a little more to other companies.
And
it
releases pressure on your phone, actually.
Exactly.
You can transfer
them. Everything in the cloud.
For now, for instance, I have a phone without a SIM, but I have all my contacts there because I've saved my contacts on Google. So I never miss it.
Yeah.
So everything just comes at one place. So that's it for the segment today.
Brilliant, brilliant. So, well, lots of things that you need to get yourself updated on, especially about Instagram. Those of you who love the app so much, but they don't have the space, or sometimes don't even have the time to reach out to grab your phone, well, it's available on web as well. A few restrictions here and there, but then it is all good. Well, that will be all for today's show. Thank you so much to Alfred Rowe, or as some people like to call him, Dr. Rowe. Such thought-provoking discussion that we had there. I do hope you picked up a thing or two. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show as well, Farida and Jeffrey. Your contributions, top class. Well, and thank you, actually, for also doing the listening as well, your contributions to the show. We totally appreciate it right here. The show will be available as a podcast on cityfmonline.com and kofimusings.com. Well, till next week, stay techie.